I could be the host of a really shitty AM radio station now.
Sure.
That's how good I sound.
Do people still listen to AM radio?
No, that's why that's where I could be. All right, everybody, welcome to Ponza Show, the podcast for the Everyman Gamer, where we cover a litany of topics.
A plethora, if you will.
A smattering of topics.
Yes.
But specifically for people who, like us, don't have a lot of time and you're trying to maximize like your hobby hours. In this episode, we're going to cover Gen Con. We went to Gen Con this year.
We did.
We'll do a little bit of hobby recap. I got some news. I don't know if it's big news or exciting news, but I have news. And then we'll just go into probably the next show topics. We got to get back into our deep dives.
Yeah, we do. I think after Gen Con, we've got a whole drawing board full of topics we're going to be really going into. I was can't speak highly enough of just the pure content you get out of an event that large.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, I'm feeling like some hobby withdrawal, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of weird that being at Gen Con is like the mecca of your hobby. But at the same time, I feel like all my real hobby, my personal stuff, I'll put on hold.
Yeah. But before we go much further, should we not, my dear bearded Viking friend, introduce ourselves?
Oh, okay, that's Corey over there.
Hi.
The handsome guy from South.
The South. The deep, dirty South.
Yeah.
And that guy over there, who just got back from raiding the English shores, is Matt. So, that's Matt.
People are going to think, like, I don't look anything like a Viking dude. Maybe if Vikings were, like, fat and pasty.
I don't understand why you are so adamant on hiding your beautiful Scandinavian heritage, my gorgeous blonde friend.
This is now a video podcast of modeling. Alright, so let's get into it. Gen Con.
Do we want to do Gen Con or do we want to do Hobby Corner first? We always do Hobby Corners first.
I feel like the audience wants to know about Gen Con, so like, why keep them waiting?
Oh, you know? No, that's a solid point. We've made them wait now 3 or 4 weeks, so we might as well just jump right into it, yeah.
Yeah, plus like I said, the hobby's been on hold for Gen Con, so now that we're like pivoting back, I feel like it's a good transformation from, like we're closing out Gen Con in the first part of this episode. And now we're on to the hobby corner, right?
Fantastic. Let's go with that outline, yeah.
So, Corey, give me a rating of some kind on Gen Con.
See, I've been going back and forth over this for the past several weeks, including during the convention itself. This convention had the best of the best moments I've ever had in my hobby career. We've had fantastic fun. We had great time. However, the flip side of that statement is it had the lowest of the lows. We are talking frustration. We are talking overcrowded. We are talking a honest-to-God, real-life encounter with, quote, that guy, end quote.
So, a real Bodak.
A real Saint Bedak. Because I don't even think we can say that other word, because if he ever does listen to this podcast, he's going to know who we're talking about.
Fuck him. I hope he does listen to this podcast. Yeah.
Saint Bodak should become a new vernacular for that guy.
Yeah. I'm going to say the silver lining. I don't want to spoil it, but the silver lining to that is we got ourselves a real nice meme out of meeting this guy.
Oh, yeah. A whole running joke for our audience, all 17 of them who listen to us, including my mom. Hi, Mom. I love you. Thank you.
Awesome. Hi, Corey's mom.
So if I had to give it a rating, I would say probably an 8 out of 10. It was great, except for when it wasn't.
All right, so I'm giving it a B+, just to flip the script. 8 out of 10 from Corey, B+ from Matt. But I think the bottom line is I would definitely go again.
I've been back and forth on it. During the lows of the lows at the convention, I didn't want to go again. I was done with it. 36 years old. I don't need to do this crap anymore.
All right, well, but, I mean, you know, like I was saying,
I do want to go again, yeah.
I could have done none of the events, and still just to hang out with you and Jeff would have made me happy.
Well, see, and that's another thing we had discussed prior to the convention, was maybe just doing a geeky weekend. And
sure. But, yeah. I mean, how do you do, like, tabletop RPGs with just 3 dudes? Now it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. A little bit bigger. We have to start our own Gen Con. I will say
with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah, I will say I would be much more excited to go to Gen Con as a host of a table.
Well, see, we discussed this too, and this is something I've been giving a lot of thought to recently, is we could easily, the three of us, do, I don't know the particulars of the arrangement Gen Con has with its independent DMs, but we could easily, the three of us, do a day's worth of sessions each and wrangle something free out of it, you know?
Yeah, so what that really means, though, Corey, is despite you being a curmudgeon about it, you are inspired by Gen Con.
Absolutely, that's the best way to put it, is Corey's always going to be a grump, he's going to be the power gamer, he's going to be the jerk, but hey, when the shit works, it works, right?
All
right,
so let's break it down. Traveling. You drove.
I drove 11 hours from the great city of Charleston, South Carolina, up over the Great Smoky Mountains and into Indianapolis.
But pretty uneventful.
Yeah, it was dull, boring 11 hours of the driving, yeah.
Just hold the wheel and go. All right. Yep. On the flip side, coming from Virginia,
Why are you selling yourself short again there?
What?
You didn't come from Virginia. We know you boarded a longship, and from Oslo itself, you set sail over the North Sea into Newfoundland.
That's right, and then I had to, like, cut up a river to get to Indy. my lack of geography knowledge. So coming from Virginia, I got to partake in pretty much every single, short of like taking a ferry somewhere, every single form of public transportation there is. I took an Uber to a train station, but the train wasn't in service, so I had to take a bus from that train station to a metro station, get on the subway, to ride the subway to another station, which got me on a city bus, which actually drove from Arlington to Baltimore, to hop on my plane in Baltimore, and then fly from Baltimore to Indy, and take another city bus from the airport to the Airbnb. And I think it took about 11 hours. But I had a lot of downtime there. I think the best downtime I had was when I got to the airport. And first off, I found out it's actually not that expensive to get drunk at an airport. If you shop around, you know what you can find out what you're doing. I found out it's really fun to sit at an airport bar and work on Shadowrun character sheets.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into Shadowrun character sheets. You guys just hold on.
Yeah. And then I also went to the lounge area at the gate, which I think was everybody there was there for Gen Con. So I got to see some of the most like awkward exchanges in the lounge. And also some of the coolest. I saw people break out like board games right there, waiting for their plane, playing board games. And I also saw people like try to make connections and just being like completely stymied, which was really awkward to watch. But yeah, so we didn't stay at a hotel at Gen Con. We stayed at an Airbnb, which I think was the way to go. Not only was it cheaper, but I really appreciated, I mean, you know, we're older guys. Being able to just sort of like drive away from Gen Con and, you know, Gen Con's over there and now we're at the Airbnb and we're doing whatever. Just kind of mentally, it helped me out a lot. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does, because I'm in the same boat you are. You said it earlier, I'm a curmudgeon. I like my little box. We each got our own rooms. We made poor Jeff sleep on the couch, but that doesn't actually bother me.
Yeah. I mean, considering my mattress folded like a taco when I laid on it, I was a little bit jealous that he got the couch.
And I totally, totally made you sleep on that bed because...
No door.
The super creepy attic hatchway that I am... If you didn't even count me being overweight, my shoulders are too big to have even fit through that attic. So that attic had to have been for like five-year-olds.
Yeah.
But that was the creepiest thing in the world, and there was no way I was sleeping in the room without a door to keep the shadow men from creeping into my room.
Corey's making it sound terrible. I thought the Airbnb was actually very nice.
All things considered, yes, it was fantastic, perfect. Small location, very affordable. It worked perfectly.
Yep, and I wonder if the price was just right because we got in like super early, and you know, mm-hmm. before the price gouge, would be something to do again. All right, let's run through the convention itself. What did you think? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was very close to what I expected. 70,000 people is what Gen Con is saying was there in 2019.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go through the events or at least start us off on those because That was all your doing. You put our events together. You're the one who booked everything. You took care of all that.
Yeah.
The convention was crowded. It was loud. And it was exactly like my brief and real small history of conventions led me to believe. It was like, yeah, it was what I expected, totally.
Yeah, it was a lot more crowded than I was expecting, even knowing it was going to be crowded. And it was a lot more, I guess, running back and forth than I expected.
Yeah, that was something I didn't quite think would happen, but totally did.
Yeah, and I wonder if maybe veteran Gen Con goers just plan better. Or maybe everyone's just running around like that. But I think I expected, because it was like the shop hall, what do you call it, the exhibit hall?
The vendor hall.
Yeah, the vendor hall, that's it, was way more just like shopping than I expected. And I think I expected more like open seating, which, I mean, there was a ton of that too. But I guess I expected like more ad hoc gaming, you know, like, but it was more commercial than I guess I was expecting. And maybe, again, maybe we're just novices at it and it really was happening and we just didn't see it. But I kind of expected there to be like open table areas and then like sign-in sheets for like, hey, I'm running a D&D game in like a half hour. Come and see me at table whatever, you know, table 132. You know, I need 5 people to do like a one shot that'll take like 4 hours. I kind of expected that, you know, but it was more like sponsored DMing and stuff like that, which is good and bad, you know. And again, I'll bet the ad hoc stuff that I'm missing out on happens. We just didn't do our research right.
Well, that was another giant part of it. You guys left earlier on Sunday.
Yeah.
I stayed a little later. There was a lot of the convention halls, the whole area, we didn't even get to. So there may have very well been areas where that was happening. And we stayed so close to the vendor hall for the majority of the time we were there, we didn't see it. Yeah.
Interesting. And in hindsight, I kind of regret, I know you and Jeff talked about doing some other stuff like LARPing and all that, which really isn't my bag. I kind of wish I had loosened up a little bit more. Like maybe like pre-gaming Gen Con would have been a good idea. And
do something a little wackier. I think if we go next year, I think I'm going to force you to do some LARPing.
Yeah, I think I got to get out of my comfort zone. But I really enjoyed it. But yeah, let's run through the events that we signed up for.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and start us off, especially since that first one was your big baby.
Yeah, we opened up with a Learn to Play Malifaux table, which to me was like the perfect icebreaker for Gen Con. It was a new game, relatively new game. I mean, I've played a little bit before. It was easygoing. It was just like, it was the three of us plus like one stranger. And it was a really friendly guy just walking us through a game that he was clearly very excited about. I don't know if he was with the team. I forget the company that owns Malifaux.
I think he was one of those volunteers, so yeah.
Yeah, but
his passion could not be underrated. He obviously loved his stuff.
Yeah, and it was super contagious, and it was like the perfect play a couple rounds, get a taste for the game. It left me wanting more. Very happy with Malifaux.
Yep. I liked the experience. I liked the demo we did. I think the sculpts are beautiful. Nope.
Not for you. Okay. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, we got to play it a little bit and then, like, walk away. Either you liked it or you didn't. Whatever.
It was fun. It's just, I've got my poison already, you know.
Yeah. We can get into more of that later, too, because I got a new poison. Let's jump on to the next one was the Thinning of the Shadow, which was our first D&D table, which I think my final score of it was, you know, I wasn't disappointed, but I wasn't like blown away.
Initially, when I sat down, I had some fun. It was the three of us and a fourth guy who we all seemed to jive real well. And then the fifth guy was not a big fan of ours.
No, we were Bodax. We were his Bodax.
We were his boat. I don't even think we were his boat axe because we didn't make a joke about menstruation.
No, we didn't make any mixed company inappropriate jokes. And yeah. I think we kept the humor inclusive. We're really touting up this Bodak encounter. You know, where he was just a jerk. He was just a mean guy, straight up.
We're gonna get to that. Yeah. We'll get to Shadowrun here at the end.
So I think only in hindsight am I really bothered with that game because I didn't realize the guy wasn't having fun playing with him. You know, like I'm that like socially tone deaf that I wasn't picking up on it. But the game itself was okay. You know, it didn't leave me wanting more.
When we sat down initially to play, I enjoyed it. I took it not seriously. I was just kind of relaxing and playing and having fun. And the longer I've spent away from the game thinking about it, the more I realized that
it didn't.
It kind of felt like you were being phoned in. Yeah.
Yeah. It was also really expensive too, right? It was like $10.
I think it was one of the more expensive events we attended.
Which tells me that there's no like pricing scheme at Gen Con.
Yeah. You know,
people are charging whatever they want. It's a total crapshoot.
Yeah.
Speaking of crapshoots, we went from there to the Emperor's Promise, the 40K choo-choo train.
Choo-choo train is express elevator to hell going down.
Oh, yeah, what an awesome presentation for such a letdown. So to give you an idea, you walk into the hall where this game is going to be, and it's a built-up, you know, like handmade 40K Imperial or Space Marine spaceship, like those long cathedral ships, right? Corey's.
I'm dying on this side of the camera. He's killing me with every piece of ignorance he's spewing.
You know that choo-choo train looking thing that the Space Marines fly around in?
It was an Imperial battle cruiser for all the people who know what the hell they're talking about.
But it was like 12 feet long, right? And it was like 8 feet tall. It was huge. It looked so cool.
It was put on by the Cincinnati Area Arsenal, Wargaming Arsenal.
Yep.
Apparently, they had some staffing issues. One of their guys, this was part of, to go back briefly to what Matt was talking about, and his issues he had with traveling, a lot of people coming out of the Northeast were really delayed. I guess there was some really bad weather, lots of flights canceled. And apparently, one of the guys for this Emperor's Promise game we had signed up for was unable to make it. The guy who was their designated kill team leader.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I guess I got lucky with my flight. I didn't realize people were having problems. But I think we covered what the Emperor's Promise was supposed to be. It's like a three-prong approach to like a greater story where one group is playing kill team, another group is playing rogue trader, and another group is playing Space Hulk. And together, the outcome describes some sort of group narrative. But things were so chaotic when we arrived that like they didn't have space set up for us. They didn't have.
They were overbooked, understaffed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of a nice way to say it, because fortunately the staff did take care of us. We put on the I need to speak to your manager look.
Yep.
And we got the manager, and they handled it real well. It was really nice, but the event itself was not.
Yeah.
Not very well organized, mainly due to the staffing issues they had due to travel problems.
And I think also, too, they had really lofty goals about what this thing was supposed to play out as. That was just, I think, in the context of a convention, is really hard to meet. So I think it was they were up against it in the first place. And I think if I could get the chance to like help them set up for next year, one big step that I would take is like stanchioning off the play area. I think not only would that make people who are there to play a little bit more controlled, but I think it would add a really cool air of like exclusivity to playing in.
I think that's a fantastic suggestion.
Yeah, you hand in your tickets and then you get to go into the choo-choo train. Yep, and no one else can go with you unless they're also playing. Because I feel like there were a lot of people just standing around watching, which is probably just what happens at conventions, but it was really aggravating when you're trying to figure out what you're there to do, you know?
Yep. We had a guy who's never played Kill Team before. We had pieces that even Corey, who's a little bit of a knowledgeable when it comes to 40K, had no clue what the hell he was looking at. Mm-hmm. It was just so disorganized and so overcrowded. It was kind of a letdown that night, yeah.
But still the coolest effort I think I saw at Gen Con. I will give it that. I don't think anybody put on a presentation like that. I don't think anyone even tried to do like a multiple part narrative to a story. Really cool idea. I don't know if I would sign up for it again next year, but I would definitely go check it out next year to see how it goes.
Yeah, the one thing I really like to underline is the people who put that on, the Cincinnati Gamers who did that. Once we got out of that specific event, their staff treated us incredibly well, and then later events we happened to attend, they were running, and we'll go over this later here, went off without a hitch. They were fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, it's really weird that, like, our lowest low comes and our highest high comes from the same company. So yep. Speaking of which, so we refunded our tickets for The Emperor's Promise, and then we kind of strolled around, and our intuition checks led us to to look at the Shadowrun play area, yep. Which I thought was a terrible place to play Shadowrun. It was such a could you pick like a more like acoustically like inappropriate room to play like a bunch of like sit down tables? I don't know what you could do different. Maybe it's you got to put up like little barriers, you know, like little sound barriers between tables. I think that would have been kind of cool, like tapestries.
You're 100% correct, and it's an overbearing theme here with, I don't know about prior Gen Cons, I imagine it's got to be the same. Overcrowding is a constant theme, a regular theme throughout this event.
Yeah.
And the Catalyst Games Lab room where we played Shadowrun was a perfect example of overcrowding, and it was, yeah.
Yeah, and I also wonder if they, first off, if they, well, they have to know like how loud and overcrowded it is in there, because they're in the room dealing with it, you know, like all day, like the management I'm specifically talking about.
Yep.
But maybe there's just like not the resources to do something about it. And again, I really think just putting up like curtains on like metal frame dollies and just putting them between tables would have done so much to help out.
Should have done is they should have taken two of those rooms, split the tables in half, put one half over here, one half in the other room.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
Done.
I don't know.
Move on.
But so we wandered into the Shadowrun area and we hooked up with a character building workshop, which yep. I think is a lot of fun and really speaks to what I think is the like game within a game appeal of Shadowrun. You know what I mean? Like half a lot of fun is playing Shadowrun, obviously. But a really big part of the fun of Shadowrun is just making your character, and you know, you got your circle of friends around you, and you're talking about like the gear that you're installing in your character, and like, oh shit, now I can get like +2 dice to my initiative, and the, you know, the guy next to you is like, oh, I got a sniper rifle that can see like in infrared and like super far, and then the guy's like, oh, I got a drone with a sniper rifle, and you know, the other guy's like, I'm going to the astral, you know, and I think a lot of fun of Shadowrun is just you got to build the character as a group, right?
Yep.
That's the best way to play any game, I think, is group building. And Shadowrun, just something about it. You know, it's the same magic as like when you're a kid and you got like the I'm dating myself here, but you got like the Toys R Us magazine and you're circling what you want for Christmas, you know, or you know, it's the same like excitement.
I'm going to date myself. This is like, takes me back to the early days of Dungeons & Dragons, where you had the massive tables of gear you could buy and how much it costs and the encumbrance. And I'm like the only person I've ever talked to, I've ever heard of, who liked the encumbrance system. I loved having to loot the dungeon and then go back to town and rent a horse and a wagon, bring back to the dungeon and take all the rest of my treasure back to town. I loved that minutia. And that's what I loved about our Shadowrun experience was Gary the accountant.
Yeah, and you went
so
out
much
money, yeah.
Money
yeah.
That I was buying the tank, the Ares, APC. I was kitting it out with all sorts of turrets, and it was I love that kind of minutia in my RPGs, and it thrilled me to no end.
So we're building characters until like 11 o'clock, midnight.
Yeah, right? I think they kicked us out of there at midnight.
Yeah. To turn around and come back the next morning, 8 o'clock sharp, and play Shadowrun for the first time. And I think I forget his name, but the guy who ran our table definitely deserves a shout out.
Richard, yep. I forget his last name. I've got his info because we're kind of hoping to maybe have an interview with Richard here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, Richard, I hope that there's a level of organization at Gen Con enough where a DM or whatever, Dungeon Master, Storyteller, or whatever they call it for Shadowrun, of Richard's caliber can be looked at by other people as, like, an example of how to run a convention game.
Yep.
His energy was just absolutely inspiring. He knew all the rules, and he only shared, like, he trickle-fed the rules to us just to keep the game going, which I think was perfect. Because I think that the worst thing you can do is say, hold up, let me read this at a timetable, you know? That's, like, the worst thing. And that never happened. So, yeah. Richard, if by chance you listen to this, thank you so much. Playing it at your Shadowrun table was definitely one of the highlights of my visit. And we had to talk about his awesome punk vest.
you beat me to it. Yeah. This guy, he must weigh all of about 140 pounds soaking wet. He's kind of tall, real skinny, and he's got this red, almost looks like a motorcycle gang's vest on. And it's got all this like 1% orc stuff on it, and it's just this in-character Shadowrun universe specific vest he's built. We were talking to him about it during the game. Matt, you go ahead and tell him about when he was role playing the orc at the door.
Yeah, I looked away. I was looking at my character sheet, and next time I look up, and narratively he's explaining that, you know, we're in Neo Tokyo and we're approaching a club or a bar or something like that, and there's an orc bouncer. So as he's describing this, and I'm looking down at my character sheet, and I look up, and all of a sudden this guy, he's got tusks in his mouth, man. He's got plastic like vampire teeth, but for orcs.
He's got like some type of 3D printed prosthetic tusk, yeah. And he is just so into playing this orc door guard who, like, I feel bad because he got to play the character for like maybe 2 minutes, right. And you could tell he was just loving it.
Right, yeah. Man, I am envious of anyone who gets to play Shadowrun or any other game with this guy, because his energy was absolutely inspiring.
Yes.
Yeah, so definitely one of our highs. So we went from, we played a little Shadowrun mission to playing Tarantula Queen Regicide, which is our other D&D game, which
speaks... This was one of the, like, the Shadowrun game we played Friday morning was one of the big highlights, and then the Tarantula Queen was the other second giant highlight we had. This was just fantastic session.
Yeah, to go from one table to the other all in the same day was kind of crazy, you know, like we peaked pretty early at Gen Con, you know. I forget his name too, but the guy running Regicide, first off, he was very unassuming, and yeah. By that I mean, like, he was casual at the table. Like, when I approached him saying, like, hey, is this, you know, because I approached him early saying, like, hey, is this our table? And what, you know, what's the game going to be like? Do we need character sheets? And I was like, can I make my own character? He was just like, yeah, whatever. It's cool. I have pre-mades if you want them. But yeah, go ahead and make your own if that's cool too. Like, he was so flexible. You know, he had pre-made characters set aside if you needed them. If you didn't, it was cool. He had dice for you if you needed them. You know, if not, it's cool. You can play on a paper character sheet. You can play on your laptop. He didn't care. And I think what I... this guy, I'm struggling for the way to say it. Watching him DM a game made me instantly feel like I don't know how to DM whatsoever. Right? Yeah. The way he got into character, like, he just like flowed like from one NPC to the other. Nothing like surprise. Like, he was surprised by things, but he rolled with the punches. Like, even in character though, you know. And I gotta say, I feel terrible for forgetting his name. And if by chance he's listening to this podcast, I walked away from Gen Con being like, I need to DM, like, just like an ounce like this guy, you know? Yeah. Just like, if I can just get like a piece of this talent to my table, I have like compounded my DMing. Does this make sense?
It does. Yeah. His facial expressions, like, that's one of the things I took away from it. Is Matt, you hit it on the head. He was so in character. His facial expressions changed from NPC to NPC. He did different gestures. He did different voices, and none of them were over the top. None of them were crazy. It was just so... I hate to use these words because I hate using these words. It was flawless. It was perfect.
Yeah.
It was so well done. It was inspirational for any DM. Like, that guy should record himself, put it on YouTube, and charge people to watch it.
Totally. He should. Enough people are running, like, YouTube channels, like, DMing workshops and stuff like that. This guy could actually teach you some serious stuff about parts of the craft, I'll call it. that I don't see other channels really talking about.
And he's also associated with that Cincinnati area gamers. He's one of the other folks we'd worked with that,
yeah,
that weekend.
How weird was that? But the commonality between our Shadowrun guy and our Dungeons & Dragons guy is that they clearly knew the material.
Yep.
And the passion they had for the game was obvious at every step. Every step. You know?
Yep.
And I also want to say that as a dad, seeing... Because we had a father-son duo opposite.
Yep.
Seeing the... I mean, because at first I was like, oh, you know, like... Because we've seen it before where, like, the dad is clearly dragging his family to Gen Con and they're not into it or they're too young. And he's just, like, babysitting while he's his own child while he's also playing a game. The dad encouraged his kid to play and to make choices and stuff like that. And, you know, like, he didn't, like, control him too much, I thought. He did tell him, like, doing whatever would clearly be better for your character, right? Like, you're
yep.
a rogue.
Yeah, there was some guidance. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
But to see the kid's excitement when he was rolling dice was absolutely... I don't know. It was so charming. You know, like, he...
It was, yeah.
Every dice had to go in both hands, and he had to, like, shake it with his whole body. And I'm surprised dice didn't go, like, flying across the table, because he was so excited for every dice roll.
Yeah.
My one regret is I kind of wish that kid had gotten, like, the final blow on the story's villain.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he would have, like, held on to that for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that could... I was playing my buff wizard, my wizard who I run around and sling haste spells on, and I spent it on Jeff's character instead of the young kid, and I still look back and think, maybe I should have put it on the kid just to give him that, you know, that little,
I mean,
extra little oof.
Yeah, he had fun, clearly, but just the kid was so awesome that I just, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but. So we close out the night with Regicide, and then the next day, which I think is Saturday.
Yep.
We started at 10 o'clock with the kill team. Don't call it a tournament, because it's actually a campaign.
It was not a tournament, it was a campaign.
Yep, so Corey and I, we got to team up.
Yes, for all the good it did us.
Hey, and I also have to say, because I just finished editing the last podcast... I did not do the Harlequins. I put a drop of paint on the Harlequins, and like I got like so intimidated. And the contrast, I guess I got really lucky because I've used the same Vallejo brush-on primer on my models. And then when I did my Space Marines with the contrast blues, it worked out. And I took my models to a Games Workshop store to play, to hopefully play. I didn't get to play. But also to just paint for a little bit. This is when I was home alone. and people, the whole store was like, wait, you did brush on primer and contrast paint? So like, it didn't make sense. I'm like, yeah, what's so confusing? And I showed them the models. And they're like, that doesn't, because you have to use a special primer for contrast paints. Otherwise,
you're
it comes out all streaky.
White. No, that's not true. It's just, They're trying to sell you on the James Workshop's spray primer, weren't they?
Well, that's what they recommended. But, I mean, true to their word, okay, Corey's thumbing down, but true to their word, so I go home and I've got my brush-on primer Harlequins, and I try some different contrast paints, and it's all runny. You know, it may have just been like ink, you know? And it didn't turn out good, so I was like, oh, I'm not going to have these Harlequins ready. And I found the courage to paint my cow. So I rolled out to this, don't call it a tournament, I rolled out to the campaign with Tao.
With Tao.
Yeah, my boys. And went 0 for 3.
0 for 2. We all 0
for
2.
0 for 2. Yeah. Yeah, so Corey and I were on a team, and Corey was definitely doing all the heavy lifting.
I went 1 for 2, and I only just lost the second game.
Yeah.
It was down to the wire. He was playing. I was playing my Dark Eldar, Cabalites and Witches mixed.
Yeah.
He the second game was playing Thousand Sons, and
that was my first game. Was the Thousand Sons guys? Those guys are wicked, man.
Those guys are hard. I would totally change up everything if I was doing it again. I'd change up my heavy weapon. I'd gone with a splinter cannon, which has got no AP. I went with a, what was my light weapon? I'm forgetting right now. The Shredder, no AP. And I just, you can't do nothing against Space Marines.
Yeah, I would have just done the Space Marines and not the Tau. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I also want to say that the people playing at the campaign were super friendly. Because I went in, like, really intimidated, like, oh, you know, they're not painted super well, and I'm not really familiar with the rules. Everyone was like, yeah, if you want to count that as cover, it's cool, or, you know, oh, you forgot about this rule, go back and do it. You know, everyone was just casual playing. And the Thousand Sun guy, he did come, he said, like, you're the nicest Tau player I've ever met.
I didn't hear that.
I was like, that's only because I don't know what I'm doing. And then, so from him, I went on to play against this guy with an Eldar team and was so laid back and casual that I went in there kind of guns blazing, and he tabled me by round two. And it was only in hindsight that I found out that he was like the Gen Con kill team tournament winner. Man, that guy was so, he was playing on such another level that I'll never get there. But he was really polite about it.
Well, and then, because the guy I played the first time was that dude's dad.
Yeah, who was the other, like, tournament winner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so these guys, they were not playing around. And even, like, in a casual campaign, they were...
They were good. They were all real good.
I guess they couldn't tone it down. They didn't know how to tone it down so much anymore.
No.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun. This was, like, the second game of Kill Team I'd ever played, second and third.
Yeah.
And it was, like, there was no moment in either of the two games I played where I was not biting my nails. It was just, it was one moment of action. It was feel no pains being rolled. It was invulnerable saves being made. It was this incredible, like, our first game, I don't think we had any more than three or four models die. And I ended up winning by, like, 2 points, if that.
Wow.
And that was against Alex. I think his name was Alex. And then the second guy, Richard, who you'd played first.
Yeah.
The only reason he won is because he broke my team.
Mm.
Like, I had him on the ropes the whole time. But it was all... I was throwing... I ended up throwing my heavy weapons guy against a Thousand Sun Terminator just to keep him from launching missiles into the rest of my army.
Yeah. Against him, I got really lucky. One of my gun drones... like, took on all comers and just endured. Like, he didn't pull off anything, but he just, like, sat in, like, the middle objective and could not be killed. I think he got on, like, no joke, this gun drone had, like, 4 flesh wounds. It was pretty stupid. I've never had so much fun losing at a game before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that turned
out. That was another thing. The same event, the organizers, and I didn't catch the name of the two gentlemen who were the organizers of the Kill Team tournament, not tournament, the campaign. They had this genius, like, because there was sometimes, especially with the Kill Team and these boards we were on, were super convoluted, really well done, but it was, you couldn't ever really get your head down to determine line of sight. And they did the organizers did this thing that was so incredibly intelligent, I felt stupid for not having thought of it myself.
What'd they do?
They'd take their phones, and they'd turn the camera on, and they'd put the camera right behind your guy's head or right in front of your guy's head.
Oh, cool.
And determine line of sight that way. And I just thought that was so brilliant that, I mean, everybody's got a phone anymore.
Yeah.
If you've ever got questions about line of sight, that's all you need is you just take your camera, you put it down there, you snap a picture, and it's yes or no.
Totally. Do you get, like, cool action shots, too, while you're doing that?
I imagine you could. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was part of the fun of... what I was playing at Gen Con was I took pictures and, like, sent them to my wife and, like, look at all my Tau getting killed. don't they look cool while they're getting killed? Look at all my guys not on the objective. Don't they look awesome? No, I had a lot of fun losing horribly at Kill Team. So from there we were going to do Emperor's Promise again as, like, a different game, like, pick, like, a different third of them. Yeah. But instead we went on to play more Shadowrun. We got the Shadowrun bug.
Yeah, we had the bug hard.
Yeah, everybody
fell in love with Shadowrun.
Yeah, we did. And
Game two was a raging pile of Bodak.
Yep. So I want to say about the game itself was more about what I was expecting at Gen Con, where it was just kind of, like, not good gaming, but it was gaming. Bless his heart, the guy who ran our table, I think he picked it up like last minute. Like, I think he was like going to go home or something like that. And they were like, we really need you. So he volunteered. I appreciate that. But if I was in his shoes, I would have been like, guys, can I take 5 minutes to read the module instead of reading as I go along? I don't think anyone who would take an issue with that is not someone you're going to win over anyway. So that would have really helped. That's where we met Bodak.
Saint Bodak.
Saint Bodak.
So you got to realize here, so not only do we have, it's Jeff, Matt, and myself, and we've got characters who we've played in one game.
One game.
So they're brand new.
Yep.
We've got two other guys, another father-son team, who, again, were a fantastic example of a father-son team.
Really, I would contest that. I think that was actually the bad example of dad telling son what to do.
Excuse me. Yeah. I don't have any firsthand experience being a father, so I'll acquiesce to your opinion.
Yeah, it was more dad is playing two characters.
They had the two random characters, two pre-gens.
Yep.
We had another guy who had a character who, although definitely more powerful than ours, didn't come over as over the top.
Didn't come off as a Bodak, we'll say.
Didn't come off as a Bodak, and then we had the namesake himself, Saint Bodak.
Yeah.
This guy's got I love the idea of placards that tell like your character's name, your character's role, your name, so everybody at the table can see who you are, who you're playing.
Kind of mandatory at a place like Gen Con.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense at a table full of strangers.
Yeah.
Saint Bodak's character placard had, do you even remember how much karma, or kind of what they use as experience?
Like 65 or 95 65? Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I've got 3, and he's got 65.
Let me, hold on 1 second. Go on and explain the story we played. I think that's important to the context of Bodak. But I want to look at, like, when you make a Shadowrun character, you know how, like, tabletop games have, like, if you want to play someone more experienced than a new character, this is how much experience points you get, right?
Yes.
Like, if you want to play, like, you're playing vampire, you don't want to play, like, a newly turned vampire, you get so many. Let me look up Shadowrun and see how many points they give out if you want to play a more experienced Shadowrun.
Sure, sure. So the context, the concept of the game we were playing specifically was we had been hired by the Johnson, the guy who was hiring us to do a mission, that's what the Shadowruns are called. That's what missions are called in Shadowrun, is they're called Shadowruns.
Mm-hmm.
The Johnson, the person who was organizing this mission, hired us to find somebody, an assassin, another Shadowrunner, who had shot and killed one of their friends. So that's what you're doing, is you're getting hired by this guy to find out who shot and killed his friend. So we've got a couple leads, and part of the whole Shadowrun thing is you're supposed to, as a group, figure out how you're going to go about finding out what you need to find out about the mission, how you're going to go about completing the mission, and how any complications that may come along.
Well, I mean, more than that is any tabletop game is it's a collaborative thing, right? And I think you're glossing over what I think is very important, is this arc in Shadowrun, live play or whatever they call it, is taking place in Neo Tokyo, which has some like very strict rules about like equipment, like firearms were very hard to go by in Shadowrun.
Yep.
Neo Tokyo, and also there's a lot of like delicate nuance to negotiations and stuff like that.
100%. Yeah. As Japan in our world is a very nuanced and very particular culture, the same thing holds true in the alternate world of Shadowrun. As Matt was saying, there's no guns allowed. You're not supposed to have any type of firearms. And there's also a very particular way that you're supposed to engage in business. It's very honor-bound, very tradition-bound. It's something that our typical Western culture doesn't deal with. We're very to the point, we're very, there's a reason they call us barbarians, is because to them we seem very, very barbaric.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, like, strict, call it racist, like, Japanese culture set up in these modules. And here comes Saint Bodak, who is this, he's like a French crusader in the
French crusader.
Yep.
And the way the Shadowrun works is the magic in Shadowrun is it's almost kind of like Mage the Awakened or Mage the Ascension, where it's kind of magic works based on however your character thinks it should work. So yep. He's this Catholic crusader type character in Shinto Japan.
Yeah. So not a smooth fit, right? Okay, no. So I got the numbers. No. A normal Shadowrun character starts off with 25 karma points,
yep.
which you use to buy qualities and stuff like that.
Yep.
And they recommend going up to 70 for a prime, quote-unquote, prime runner. So if you're running, like you want to start with a lot of experience with. So this guy is starting off at, like, prime runner level or higher, depending on, like, what the number actually was. So it's at least 60. Could be, maybe I'm misremembering, and it's, like, up to 90. But he's a super well-off character compared to starting characters.
And that was a conversation we had Sunday with one of the Catalyst guys, the volunteers there, was Prime was like what Catalyst Games does for like your level 20 D&D characters is kind of the equivalent I drew in my head to what he was telling us.
Yeah. I don't want to spend like the whole time complaining about Bodak, but the takeaway is we have a table full of new players, one experienced player who is relaxed about it, and
yep.
Bodak, who is leagues ahead of any of us, like everything that we specialized in, he could do better somehow.
Yep.
I'm surprised he didn't grab like the Decker kids cyber deck and start hacking for him. And I just like the real takeaway for me is if you're playing at a convention, there's got to be like some give and take. I mean, sure, maybe you don't get to play a lot of games anymore, and you've had this character for a millennia, and you're just so excited to finally get to dust off your Bodak and play him. But you gotta, like, let other people have their fun, too, right?
Yeah, we all paid our whatever price, the $8 it was to be there, and he totally made it not worth $8.
Yeah, and also, like, he metagamed, too. Like, God, just, like, everything about this guy was just so wrong. And he, like, changed things. After the fact, he tried to shoot someone, and we were all like, that's a terrible idea. He was like, oh, it's actually just stun bullets. And like,
he didn't try to shoot somebody, he did, to the point where my not combat face character was like 2 seconds from shooting him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're right, after the fact, it was, oh no, that was a stun bullet.
Yeah, I can save a little bit of face by saying stun bullet.
Yeah, because everybody at the table is looking at me like I'm out of my mind.
Yeah. I went into Gen Con expecting to see a lot more people like him. I'm glad I was wrong.
Yep.
This guy, I mean, playing like that, you are ruining other people's experience. You really
Absolutely.
Are. You're robbing them of their chance to have their fun, too. And I don't know why someone like that needs to do it. I mean, again, maybe he doesn't get to play a lot and, you know, he was just really excited. That's the devil's advocate. I don't know. Maybe he's just a dick.
That's the one I was thinking of, as long those lines was the comment I was holding back in that moment. Yeah.
But I mean, he was just a mean guy. But still had fun. And then, are we missing out? We played another Shadowrun game that morning or something like that? Or was it the next morning?
The next morning we did the Call of Cthulhu game for mixed results at the end.
So we gotta rewind time, because I think it was... remember we played the game with like the three other guys? They were eating White Castle. What morning was that?
No, that was Tarantula Queen, the guy who played the D&D equivalent to Frank from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Frank Heelstick.
Yeah. No. One of the mornings we showed up and played a game of Shadowrun with like three. I thought they were like biker looking dudes, and they were eating White Castle when we all sat down.
That was our first one, the out of body experience.
You're right.
That was the first game of Shadowrun we played.
Wow, that'll be fun to edit.
You don't edit this now.
No.
We're an hour in.
So then Sunday morning we played Call of Cthulhu, which was the other, like... No, we're also missing the Infinity. So between some of these games, we got the chance to like go to the exhibitor hall, and I found the Infinity table or area, and I fell in love. I've always had my eye on Infinity because I like the art aesthetic of it and
sure.
Just like the sheer wackiness of it. And I always kind of understood that there was like a action reaction mechanic to Infinity, but I didn't really understand completely what it entailed. And just playing that like little store demo with like the three models blew me away. So for anyone who's not aware, Infinity is like a sci-fi skirmish level game. So if you're thinking of like Kill Team, it's the same amount of models.
Yep.
And everything works on a D20. So whenever you're trying to do something, you're rolling a 20-sided die and trying to roll under your stat. So if your shooting is like 16, you roll a D20, you need 16 or lower to hit your target. It seemed really fluid to me. But the real takeaway is that whenever someone in your line of sight does something, you get the chance to do something back. So you never really get to like check out of an Infinity game. You always have to like look for your chances to have a reaction, do something. And then I went home since Gen Con and I've watched a lot of live plays of Infinity, and that I think that observation holds true, is that it never really feels like it's not your turn because you always get to do something, which I think is really appealing because one of my gripes with 40K, with Kill Team, Malifaux, pick your game, when it's not your turn, you can kind of just check out, and I think. I really see it at, when I go to a Games Workshop store and I watch people play a game of like full on 40K, and I see people when it's not their turn, they just walk away from the table because the other guy has so much like dice rolling to do and so much math to figure out, which is cool if that's your jam, but loop it back to the theme of the show. I'm a 33-year-old man, father of three. If I'm at the store to play, I'm getting some very rare time to myself. I need to be playing, you know? So a game like Infinity has a lot of appeal to me because it seems very active. It also seems very cheap. You don't need a lot of models to play.
Yeah, that's a really good point about it.
Yeah, and what really like the final nail that got me to take my wallet out was I asked around about active players at the table or at the store. They said, "Yeah, check out our website. We've got a bunch of people like on a map." And so I found the map of my home area and I hit up like one guy, emailed him. He emailed me and I was like, "Hey, are you active?" And he emailed me back within a half hour saying, "Yeah, I'm active and I run games at these stores, every other week or whatever, and we also have a Discord." And then I got into the Nova Discord, which is this huge community. I've been missing out, man. 'Cause I've been kind of like feeling like I'm on an island out here in Virginia. Nothing could be further from the truth. The community out here is apparently really big. That Discord is hopping. And there's all sorts of channels. There's 40K channels, there's Infinity channels, there's Kill Team
Oh,
channels.
wow.
Yeah, there's RPG channels, there's trading card channels, there's Magic the Gathering channels. Every single game in the hobby you could think of, there's a channel on there, and it's all hopping.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
We'll have to get some of those guys on for an interview eventually.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So, I bought like $200 worth of Infinity stuff, like right there, and I haven't even opened the boxes. I mean, I opened the box to get the rule book, but I haven't even like looked at
I'm
the models yet.
and Matt, in his baby experience with miniatures, looks at me and goes, "How do I assemble metal models?" Because
Yeah.
all of the Infinity Wars are all metal.
Yeah,
And I just smiled.
and so I think if I'm looking at the Harlequins, like this is intimidating, then the metal Infinity guys are gonna give me a run for my money.
No. If you did Harlequins like you did, metal's nothing. It's just super glue.
Okay, that's reassuring. So, and also I'm getting at the right time because I think Vallejo has a partnership with the Infinity company, Corvus Belli, I think they're called, and they're releasing like model, not sorry, like faction paint sets.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
cool.
so you buy a faction, you buy the box of paint, you're good to go.
You're all set.
Didn't I say something like that for Father's Day?
You did, yes.
Yeah, Patrick Paints. Games Workshop, right? Listening.
No, they're not.
Twitter at Pawns the Show.
And like the only thing I've got to add to what Matt was saying, because he's 100% right about one, the cost of the entry into that game, and two, its community is it's low entry. It's like getting a Kill Team. It's affordable. It's easy. And the community is obviously functioning at a level that the Games Workshop has only just started with the Rise of 8th Edition to really support. But Matt's opinion about the action and reaction phases is completely antithesis to mine. I felt like the turns were very stilted. I'm sorry, Matt. I couldn't do with the, okay, I'm moving weight, your turn. Okay, my turn again, I'm moving weight, your turn.
Yeah.
And that, and you're right. It's the fact that it's a completely opposite approach to the turn and the action economy you'll see in other war games.
Yeah.
But for me, who's been in my side of the hobby for the last 15 years or so, I couldn't do it. I couldn't make the conversion.
Totally. I could see, like, if you're rolling out of a, you know, starting your turn, you've got a solid strategy in mind, and then it's just immediately interrupted by the first reaction. You know, you're like, oh, what the fuck do I do now? I get it, and I agree with that. All right, let's close it out. We're going on like an hour long here, so let's do Crimson Carnival.
Crimson Carnival. This is another high of the highs, low of the lows.
Low of the low. Because I think if I didn't have a witness for what I encountered playing Crimson Carnival, no one would believe me.
We believe you. So this was Sunday morning. This is the end of the convention. Things are going to be wrapping up in a handful of hours. We go over to a different building, to Chaosium's studio, where they're running Call of Cthulhu games.
Mm-hmm.
We get there, and what do we find out, Matt, right away?
Our DM is MIA.
MIA. I believe they said he was sick, but he is not there. Yeah.
He's not there.
Yeah. So we get told you can either wait till 10 or 11, or we can give you a refund.
Yep. And then luckily, what was her name? Anne showed up?
Yeah, I'm forgetting the woman's name.
I think her name was Anne.
You missed a spot in here. We came back at the appropriate time, and GM, who was MIA, came in.
You're right.
And I noticed something right away. I rolled a natural 20 on my perception check. Dude was exhausted. Dude was not well.
Yeah.
Dude was not there.
Yeah, he was on some NyQuil or just still drunk or something. Yeah, you're right.
This woman from Chaosium volunteers to head up a table as well. And Corey jumps right on that. Like, we're playing with Anne or whatever her name was.
I think it was Anne, yeah.
And so we all get to the table, we all sit down, and original GM goes to his table, and there's only two people there, and the Chaosium people ask our table, do some of you guys want to go over to that table?
Yep. And like an idiot, I said, yeah, I'll volunteer. I'll be the nice. Because we were at this really like stymied, like no one's budging, but clearly someone has to budge for life to move on. So I made
eye contact with my blonde Viking friend, this statuesque beauty from Scandinavia, and I implored him, Matt, don't go! Don't! I've seen this! I've seen this! And this guy, who in the past has had to tell people to get away from his table because it's overcrowded, who's been that guy, that DM, fell on his sword and went over to original GM's table.
You're right. And I've regretted it ever since. So, like that Shadowrun guy who volunteered to pick up a story in like the last minute, and my recommendation in hindsight was take a beat and just read the thing ahead of time, I encountered again. And I'm at a table with friendly enough people, but I'm not like clicking with anyone, so it was kind of awkward, you know. Maybe it was me, maybe I was too forward, you know. But as I'm playing Corey, like I'm describing my action, and I look up from my character sheet and I look at DM, and he is, I'm not exaggerating, fast asleep.
I
at the table.
It broke my heart to hear that.
Like he keeps like coming out of it, you know, like he's dozing off and like snapping back. But it gets to the point where like I legit asked him, I'm like, hey, are you okay? And he insisted he was. So I'm like, okay, let's keep playing. But every time people at our table are like taking turns, we are like looking at each other for confirmation of what we're doing and not the DM. And it's just not like, legit. He kept like checking in and out of the story, you know. And I'm glad for the miracle of technology because I was able to text you guys like, hey, look over at my table.
You did.
Because I knew if you guys didn't see it, like, then and there, you would think I was exaggerating or, you know, like, embellishing for the sake of the story. But I'm not. He legit fell asleep at the table.
Later, Jeff was like, why did Matt even get up and go?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, briefly, the session Jeff and I continued to sit in with the game master, Anne, went much better.
That's what
she
I heard.
She was very engaged. She did a real great job. We didn't have exactly 100% party cohesion because that was two friends.
Yeah.
Kind of playing against two friends, it felt like. But all things considered, it was. I understand how it is Chaosium's managed that intellectual property for the past however many decades and has kept the system relatively the same. It
yeah.
works.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool system. I like the idea that you have this massive pool of luck that you get to keep like cashing in to help like nudge your dice roll over to what you need to succeed. I mean, that's kind of cool. I've never seen anything like that before. I did not enjoy the custom skill listing. I played the fire breather and I had like fire breathing as a skill, and I'm like, why wouldn't that just be like performance?
Sure.
Yeah, I've never seen a system have like customizable skills where it didn't feel like it got completely out of hand to me, and I really think like smaller skill lists are the way to go. So yeah, that wrapped out Gen Con for us. DM fell asleep at the table. but really, my takeaway is it felt like the floor for being a good DM at Gen Con is like,
yeah,
the clearance for being a good DM is on the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it is literally the ground level. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think considering like some of the compensation for DMs that I've heard about, I would go back again either way. I would be double excited to go back and host a table. I would.
Obviously, I haven't put nearly as much research into the compensation that DMs get, but if you mm-hmm. were to do it and Jeff was on board, I'd totally set up, you know, I would say, let's let the three of us make some type of team. Let's brand it Pawns the Show, the game.
Yeah.
And let's run it. Let's do it.
So that was Gen Con.
Gen Con, guys.
In an hour. All right. let's move on to hobby recap. I'll go first.
You want to do hobby recap? Okay, yep. Let's do hobby recap.
Yeah. I have not touched anything Kill Team. I've not touched anything Infinity. I have instead been about getting back into the groove with my players here. Tomorrow, we're actually closing out Mouse Guard, the last session. So we'll have done three sessions of Mouse Guard, and I think that's plenty. I think Mouse Guard doesn't have a lot of longevity to it. I think the novelty wears off pretty fast.
I'm sorry to hear that, because you initially were so excited for Mouse Guard.
And you know, I would still be excited to do like a one-shot of Mouse Guard. I just don't think a campaign of Mouse Guard is really all that. But then after Mouse Guard, we're getting back into D&D, which, you know, finally, and all the players are like the same. They're like, finally, we're getting back into it. We're starting off with like a one-shot that's kind of related to the main campaign, which I think is... So it's like a B team doing stuff for the main crew in the background, which I'm really happy to do because I think it's a good way to sort of like get back into things without high stakes.
Sure.
And I've actually opened up to recruiting more players, and I think coming in on a one shot is a great way to test it to see if it's a fit. I'm a little apprehensive about bringing in new players because I think the chemistry at my table is really good and I'm kind of scared to rock the boat, you know? Sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I've been wrong before, so you know, maybe I'll meet some great new players. The meetup community around here is really big. I posted ads in like three of them earlier this afternoon, and I'm already up to like 8 responses. That I feel like I'm interviewing people for D&D, which is kind of awkward. In other news,
make sure there's no Bodak in the pile.
Yeah, I'm looking out for the Bodex. And I think my rule of thumb is I give preference to newer players first.
Sure.
You know? And I got my eye on this one guy who has only played Adventure League. And I feel like he's going to be like a rescue. Like, come out of terrible Adventure League and come over to where it's safe.
Well, let's bring you out of the B leagues and up into the majors, kid. Let's see what you got.
Yeah. Other news, D&D related, I might be off of Roll20. Which I'm really excited about. Because Roll20 is kind of like, has like a really icky management background. I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
And I think I found the app that'll finally do it. It's on iOS. It's called Encounter Plus. It's like full like campaign management where you can like type out like full encounters. You can drop in tokens for like monsters and stuff like that. And until like on the iPad, you have like token, like virtual tokens that you drag around a map. And of course you can import maps like you can on Roll20.
Sure.
The tokens have all the stats for the monster.
But is this one of the demos we saw at Gen Con?
No, it's not. Okay. It just started off. In fact, one of the really cool things about Encounter Plus is that it's so new, the writer or author of it, I don't know what you'd call it, has a Discord server, and he invites people who play or use the app to get on there. And so I'm like talking to the guy who develops the app about like feedback and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. But so where the app really takes off is when you use cable or AirPlay to connect to like a TV. And it will, instead of like screen mirroring on like an iPad, which you might be familiar with, it'll just project just the map to the TV and the tokens and an initiative tracker. So on my iPad, I have the full, I have everything. I have like the monsters, the stats, I can see behind the fog of war, stuff like that. On the TV, my characters, my players are playing on, they're seeing just the game. So it's exactly how Roll20 would work if you signed in as a player on the TV. Yeah, and he is moving to a subscription-based model, but I think it's going to be like $25 a year as opposed to Roll20 is $100.
Yeah, that $25 a year, you can, that's nothing.
That's nothing.
That's what subscription models need to be doing these days. Is we got everybody wanted to charge $10 a month. It's like,
no. I know, yeah.
No.
So it's more affordable, it's more flexible, and I'm getting in on the ground level where I feel like I can talk to the developer about like how things are going and what I would appreciate, and he's talking back. So I think that's really exciting. And again, any excuse to get away from Roll20 and their practices is exciting for me. I would even take like a productivity hit to get off of Roll20. So my last bit of news, I have an iPad Mini, which I'm excited to use. I just bought one. I'm excited to bring to the table as a DM because I think I feel like I'm like trapped behind a bunch of technology. Like I roll 20 on my laptop and I use Encounter or Dungeon Master on my iPad and I'm kind of like rooted to the spot. One of my takeaways from Gen Con is the good DMs get up and kind of ambulate and kind of gesture and stuff like that. So I can have my notes with me on my iPad and still like be more active, you know what I mean? I would ever get the chance to be a player, now I'm playing on a smaller device, so it's taking up less space and less of my attention. And then the last part of the iPad I'm excited about is using it as like a wargaming thing. So like when we're playing the kill team, don't call it a tournament, a campaign, I had my iPad Pro out and it was just, you know, like, where do I fit this cumbersome thing? And you know, every time like I handed it over to someone to like look at the rule book, I was like, please don't drop this thing. But you know, an iPad Mini is much more usable.
Sure.
And speaking of which, in addition to a really good kill team app, there's a really good Infinity app on there, so I'll be all digital for that game too.
Right, you mean Battle Scribe, right?
it's like a dedicated Infinity, I think it's called Maya.
Oh okay,
yeah.
And bastardized battle scribe you use.
No. And then the last thing, I've been looking into some other RPGs to read for the winter, fall winter season. I like to read RPGs. Pathfinder 2nd Edition came out. I want to read it. Yep. I think they do some cool things in there. I'm not a big Pathfinder fan, but I'm excited about the changes that I hear in 2nd Edition. Eclipse Phase 2nd Edition came out during Gen Con. I want to get that PDF. Eclipse Phase, just for their business practice of DRM free books.
Wow.
I think is big. So I bought the first
edition. What is Eclipse Phase? Tell us about that real quick.
Eclipse Phase is a sci-fi RPG with a focus on transhumanism. Oh. So it's like so far flung into the future where Earth has been destroyed. This is very broad strokes, by the way. I haven't done a lot of reading on Eclipse Phase. My understanding is Earth is destroyed and people live, you know, in space now, and humanity has progressed to the point where your consciousness can be downloaded from your body and put into different bodies. and artificial bodies. So gameplay wise, when you play Eclipse Phase, your character's body becomes a piece of equipment. You get like your mission. So like the default setup for Eclipse Phase is that you join this like special forces covert ops operation, which kind of keeps transhumanism alive against like cosmic threats. And so the idea is you would get like a mission to do, and you would go and get the body to best do it in. Whether that's like the pinnacle of like human bioengineering or genetics modification, or a really good computer that your character just like lives inside of, and or like just like an AI in the Matrix,
sure,
or even like. They have, like, animal bodies that you can... Like, octopuses are really big. Octopodi are really big thing of Eclipse Phase, because you get all these arms and you can do a lot of things at once with them. Like, it kind of makes sense for your engineer to have this kind of body, because he can work a bunch of different dials or, like, wrench a bunch of different things at the same time. So, like, your wrenching characters will have, like, an octopus body. Just really wacky stuff. And then the last one is Shadowrun 6th Edition.
Right.
I am holding off on buying the PDF because of that errata disaster. Errata on the first day. Oof. I just want to confirm that any PDF I buy off of, like, DriveThruRPG will have the errata put into it. You know, like, they'll keep it updated. I won't do a PDF of the core book and a PDF of errata. It's got to be...
You and I are eventually going to have to do a deep dive on Shadowrun, and specifically Shadowrun 6, because it is obvious you are unaware of the controversy that has since followed Shadowrun 6th Edition after its publishing, because it only starts with the day one errata.
Really?
And it gets deeper. Shadowrun 6th Edition is it's an express elevator going down.
Really?
Because
what I hear, I love
a single good thing about it.
Really? Because I really like what I hear about Edge, your luck stat, and yep. How it's like it's a lot more like give and take. It kind of makes me think of Savage Worlds with their Benny system and how those Bennies fly around the table while you're playing. I like that a lot. And if Shadowrun's doing that.
Yeah, you asked about Shadowrun 6th Edition at Gen Con numerous times from numerous different people. And they all gave us kind of the same upbeat opinion about it. And having read what I've read since then, I am highly skeptical of those positive opinions.
Ooh, let's do a deep dive.
Let's do a deep dive.
This is me rubbing my hands together, guys.
I think we're going to do a big deep dive on Shadowrun, and we're going to focus on what the hell went wrong with 6th Edition.
All right, that's my hobby corner.
Mine real quick so we can get the heck out of here and get people back to their lives. I've been doing a ton of painting, assembling, priming, Warhammer stuff. I took all my freaking boxes I had piled up in a corner, I glued them together, and I primed them. Just been boom, 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 boom. And then yesterday, Blizzard had the audacity to release World of Warcraft Classic. I currently have a level 14 mage on Bloodsail Buccaneers, the roleplay server.
All right.
I give no shits about games. I'm just playing WoW.
Is his name Pawns the Show?
No.
You gotta play it, dude.
It's Mariner. Right. It's Mariner. Old man Mariner, the guy who saves Matt's characters all the time.
How long of a wait did you have for getting in the servers?
Okay, so here's the good news is I got in. So servers went live 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 26th on Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got in. I poof in the middle of Northshire Valley, and it's like me, and like I look around, and there's maybe half a dozen other characters in the world. And then, like, have you ever seen like those Minecraft videos? Because everybody's played Minecraft, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Like, you know how like when shit spawns, and it's just like it's just like,
pops
just, like
in. Yep.
That's all it was characters,
the
characters.
The floodgates opened, huh?
And it was insanity. The chat server was going down about every 3 minutes. It'd go, you've been disconnected from chat. You've been reconnected to chat.
So the authentic classic WoW experience, huh?
Yep. And then I went and played some Monday night after Sarah went to bed, and that was about an hour-long queue to get in.
Wow.
And then today, I haven't been stuck in any queues whatsoever. And I played, after I got, you know, like laundry and all that shit taken care of, I played quite a bit today, too.
That's exciting, man. Good for you.
It's finally going home. Yeah.
That's right.
And that's my end of my hobby corner is World of Warcraft Classic. Go play. It's a lot of fun.
All right. So that's our show for today, guys. So social media, you find us. Pawns the Show, wherever you find social media.
Yeah, wherever you find social media, you're going to find us, Pawns the Show. We got Facebook, we got Twitter, we've got the various podcast platforms, we've got iTunes, we've got Spotify. Still don't have an Instagram yet, but
no worries.
I know Corey's always going to get that done. He's going to get that done.
Yep.
Topics for later this year, we're going to be doing a Shadowrun deep dive.
Yep.
They just released the second Space Marine Codex for Warhammer 40K. We're going to do a giant deep dive because I think people are missing that. I listen to a ton of 40K competitive podcasts, and I think there's some people out there who call themselves professionals who are missing some really big things that hopefully the next couple weeks, one of these tournaments will prove me right.
Okay. You're going to have to slow walk me through it, because I remember you were texting me about some stuff, and it seemed really power creepy.
Corey's got the brains. He knows how to look for exploits. And right. I think I found, not some exploits, but I think I found some stuff that I actually expect Games Workshop here to frequently FAQ right out of existence here in short order.
Day two errata.
And then, obviously, I think we're going to do a little bit on World of Warcraft Classic as well, because I just love this stuff. And this is video gaming history, so yeah.
Yeah, is it, how much does it cost to get in there?
It's a monthly subscription. You don't have to buy anything. If you've got a WoW account, you can subscribe and you can go play Classic right now. $15 a month.
Can't do it.
I'm waiting for you, pal.
I can't do it.
I can make you some bags, some six slot bags, because I just got my mage up to a high enough level to start tailoring a little bit.
Yeah, I can't.
Oh, yeah.
All right, maybe.
Yeah. I know what's going to happen. I'll talk to you next week when I got a couple days off.
Yeah, that'll be it. Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, so Shadowrun, Codex, Warcraft. I'd like to share my experiences bringing on another new player to my D&D group.
Fantastic, especially somebody with only Adventuring League experience. That's a guy we got to have come sit down after you've amazed him with your outrageous DMing skills and see how he feels the differences.
He'd be like, man, Adventure League wasn't that bad. I'm going back.
Why am I even on this show?
Yeah. Okay, I think that's a pretty full list.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find more.
And of course, there'll be a half a dozen other things that pop up between then and now we'll get distracted with.
Totally. All right, everybody. That's episode 6.
That's it. Have a good night, guys. Thanks for listening.